Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Red Light Podcast Redux. I am your host, Gina Savage. I'd like to welcome the WROM radio listeners in Detroit, internet users, worldwide subscribers, all the folks that tune in to the Red Light Podcast. Today's guest, we don't know each other that long, and it's surprising that we have not really connected over the years, and for reasons we'll get into later, but I'm just going to go into the list of credits. She's a performer, producer, writer, comedian, sports lover, author of the book Speak Fluent Man. We'll talk about that. She has appeared on BET-centric, according to Him and Her, The Bill Cunningham Show, SiriusXM, a host of other things. I just want to welcome you, Vaughn DiCarlo.
Thank
you. To the show. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you are like a... If you're not familiar with Vaughn, first of all, let's talk about your name, because I have a little story about that. She's lovely. There's a light in your eyes. And the light is not just of beauty, but like there's intelligence and warmth, and there's a lot going on there. And I saw that like day one with you. So I kind of have like, I don't know what the equivalent of like a bromance and it's not like I'm not a lesbian.
That's
I'm just,
a good question. What is she-mance? I don't
a
know.
She-mance?
We
is
need
it
a
she?
Word.
Is there a thing for
she-mance?
That?
She-mance? I don't know.
They're just girlfriends.
They just say girl crush.
It's girl which, crush.
You know, girl right. stuff always sound corny compared to guy stuff. Like yeah. bro crush.
Yeah, that sounds like yeah. a he-man thing. Like, yeah they're bromancing.
Girl.
Right.
Well, but thank you. Yeah. I take all those compliments and put them deep in my pocket. Thank you.
Yeah, well, that's what's going on here, especially after I read a lot about you. And so let's get into it. Your name, Vaughn DiCarlo, is from the Lily Munster thing,
yes.
right?
My mother named me after Yvonne DiCarlo.
Right.
And she was a wonderful actress. She was in, she played Moses' wife in the Ten Commandments. And I believe she was a Broadway actress.
Oh, yeah.
And she was all that and then some, but her most popular role was as Lily Munster.
Yes.
And when my mother was pregnant with me, she said she stayed in, you know, and her favorite show was The Munsters, and she loved her. And when I was born, right. I was very pale, jet black hair, and she's like, oh my God, I had a baby Munster from watching this show. And she told me that when I was an insecure teenager, of course, and I used to like to dress as like Elvira and all these,
right.
you know, things as Halloween. And she's like, right. it's funny because I named you after one of these Munsters.
Oh, wow. Like,
good thing to tell someone when you're young and insecure.
Yeah.
And she goes, well, I could have named you Lily. Then your name would be Lily Brown.
Lily Brown.
Because technically my last name is Brown. I don't use it.
Right. Well, interesting because I was once married and my husband, you know, because of my dark hair as well, he had this thing when he would hang out with his friends. He would say, you know, and did whatever the guys do, you know, don't tell Lily, which was what grandpa would say, don't tell Lily. And
yeah.
I was, don't tell Lily. So I
oh,
have
wow.
that. Yeah. Don't tell Lily. Yeah.
Strike one of sisters.
Strike one. We're at bat. All right. So let's get into it because I was listening to some things and reading some things that you grew up in Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Not the city. Like, you know how you're from a place, but you like a small town, but you say the big city that
yeah.
everyone would know.
Sure.
Well, I'm from 30 miles south of that, a small steel town called Clairton, Pennsylvania,
okay.
that no one ever heard of.
Okay.
But yeah, small steel town. Grew up in the projects, half black, half white. You know, my mother was one of two white people in the projects growing up. So that was an interesting
sure.
situation. And, you know, I talk about that in my stand up a little bit,
right.
you know, because I moved to New York and I was like, I remember the first day I got on the subway and I was like, all the white people that look regular white to me are speaking like Russian and German, like all these different languages.
Right.
And then black people who look like my dad, like regular black guys are speaking French because they're Haitian and African. And then everyone who looked like me are speaking Spanish. I'm like, what the?
Right.
Who am I and what is going on here?
Right. Where do you fit into this mix?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I guess being half black and half white here in New York makes me Puerto Rican.
Yes, you absolutely qualify for that. You do. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have one sister.
Older or younger?
Older, 18 months older.
Okay, so that's
so,
not a big...
Yeah, it was, growing up, I was always tall, and she was, like, regular height. So there's people to this day think that we're twins because we were always like the same height until we got older. And it's like, oh, not identical twins, but still they're the same age.
Got it.
And my mother dressed us alike. And she said the only way she could tell us apart when we were outside playing is I had this bright red hair. Because my mother's whiteness, right. If you look back into her DNA years and years ago, like she's from Virginia, like regular American woman. But back, her DNA says she's right. Like German Irish.
Okay.
So I have like this bright red hair that I've always just, you know, as it grows out dark. And then once the sun hits it, it turns this bright red, which makes, I think it makes me look very sickly. So I just keep dyeing it back to what it grows out as.
Right.
As opposed to this bright red hair. But that's how she could tell us apart when we were little, is my hair would just turn this bright Irish people red.
You know, I'm going to just digress because I saw something on your Facebook you had posted about like a DNA. There was a, was it you that you put this thing, the thing about the DNA?
Yeah, just, sometimes you see those posts right. on Facebook or on Twitter or whatever, and it's like, oh, wow.
It's like a DNA challenge or something. Yeah, like we're all part of a bigger.
Absolutely. And I just think the world is, the solution to all the problems in the world is very easy to me. It's like live and let live. We're all the same, especially when I first, going back to when I first came to New York and realized 5 minutes ago when this person thought I was Spanish and spoke Spanish to me, I'm still a black woman, half black, half white, technically, whatever.
Right.
Whatever that makes you is black where I'm from. Then they're mad at me because I'm not speaking Spanish. But I'm like, I'm black. 5 minutes ago, you thought I was Spanish. I'm still the exact same soul
yes.
in this body. It does not matter. And we're all running around the world mad at each other for stuff that means so little because we're all mixed up with all this crap.
We're all mixed up. You know, there was an Oprah show 100 years ago. I think it was Oprah. I'm going to credit Oprah for it. Anyway, they had
credit Oprah for everything.
Credit Oprah.
You can credit Oprah for all my stuff, too.
Credit Oprah. Oprah. So I think they had like the head of the KKK and they had some other, you know, and they had, but they had their kid. I don't know.
Like Jerry Springer. Yeah, was,
I don't know. It was whatever. It was like a black white thing, but they had the kids. They had the kids in the green room and the kids were just playing.
Yeah.
They were just playing.
You learn to be prejudiced.
That's it. That's all it is. You're just playing. They're just playing.
Because we're, you know, just, we're just these
play?
Spirits,
what
we're
the
these
hell?
Souls. And, you know, I'm very loving, very yes. nurturing as a person, very nurturing spirit. I'm happy with being nice to people.
Yes.
I like saying hello. What, like, it seems like people think that that's either weird or flirting. I'm like, it's just hello.
Yeah. No, that's true. And especially that you're attractive in saying hello. That's a whole other element we better get to
oh,
at some
please,
point. Let's
girl.
Go back to your
yes.
beginning. So there you're here you are in like essentially like this, you know, the projects or whatever. And so when do you I don't know what that's like. I don't know if you have like I wondered as I was reading about your life how you escaped a sort of drug culture.
I grew up in what you call the Nino Brown era, if you know that classic
yeah.
black film, New mm-hmm. Jack City.
Yep.
Where I grew up, it's crack hit so hard mm-hmm. that we didn't even have, like, the steel mill closed down and the police force disappeared. We were basically run by drugs and yep. the drug dealers. We had 2 state trooper cars that ran the whole town as far as police protection goes, which pretty much tells you the whole story. Like,
yes.
crack just took over. And I remember, I don't drink or do any type of drugs. I've
Me
always
either.
Been the square
yeah.
of the group. And I think watching my Aunt Cindy May, God rest her soul, she passed away a few years ago. But watching her, she was like 70s, beautiful, afro, bell bottom, sexy.
Right.
And I remember looking at her growing up, like, I want to be just like her.
Yes.
But she would be getting dressed with her friend Miss Honey and they would be drinking and smoking a little weed. And I would see that. And then time went by, the weed started smelling funny, which I learned that they were lacing it with cocaine.
Mm.
And then cocaine turned to, instead of just smoking it with weed, it turned to sniffing. And then it turned to Aunt Cindy May has no teeth because she's leaning over the stove smoking crack. She has no eyebrows. She turned into a heroin addict. So in my mind,
you saw the progression.
I saw the progression and I'm like, oh, vanity has saved my life because I don't want to be, a toothless crackhead.
Yeah. I wish I would have seen that progression. I did not escape that, honestly, because I was a child of the 80s, So I felt victim. I haven't had a drink or drug in 20 years. So, that part, at least, I feel, very fortunate. Right. I talk about that freely because I think, I hope to impart maybe some wisdom and help people with that knowledge, because
you can. It's not like I've never drank or smoked weed. The most I've ever done was smoke weed, and that's when I would feel like, oh my god, I feel like honestly made a crackhead. I can't do this. Alcohol to me, it does. I don't understand drinking, because as soon as I have a drink, two things happen. I'm sleepy as hell, and I want to go to the bathroom. I have to go to the bathroom like 50 times. It just runs right through me. The worst person on a bus. I just want to go home and go to sleep. Like,
look at that.
What the hell?
That's like your personal barometer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you just can't do it.
I'm much more fun sober, and I like to do all my dirt with a very clear mind, so I don't have any excuses. I'm not the blame it on alcohol girl. I am the I really wanted to do that girl.
Yeah.
Lucky you.
Yeah. That's good. I like that. I like to feel my feelings, whatever they are. Again, we'll get into the feelings portion of the program in a little bit when we talk about the book. But yeah, I like to be aware.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like to, and especially when we talk about being on stage, to have that over your audience a little bit too, because obviously we're in clubs and people are drinking. You just have that much more of an ability to work with them.
I don't get it. When I see people go on stage tipsy, I'm like, how do you even keep focus of what you're, because I'm a writer first at heart. So when I'm performing, I have my goals, and I could go off and, deal with the audience or whatever. I don't consider myself a crowd worker per se, but I have, set things in my head that I want to get to. And if I'm drunk, I'm not getting to none of that.
Right.
I'm just going to be up there yapping. And as a female comic, what you don't want to do is come off like you're just yapping, because that's what they're going to think you're going to do anyway, because you're a woman.
Right.
You're going to yap about nothing.
Right. Yeah. Right. You're just going to be yapping. All right. So you're growing up in the projects. Right. What's the dynamic with entertainment? Where does that bug hit
you? It doesn't exist.
Doesn't.
It's not real. The people that you see on TV are fantasies. It's like Santa Claus. So when I grew up, I have a one-woman show called Lasagna.
Yes.
It's a coming-of-age journey, and I talk about a lot of this in the first part of the show, like how I would dream about coming to New York. I wrote about it when I was 10 years old, that I wanted to move to New York and write. And there was something about freedom in performing and singing and writing and doing all these things. And I was obsessed with Whoopi Goldberg when I first saw her one-woman show.
Yes.
And I'm like, she's an actress. She's funny. She can sing. She's in film. She's in theater. Like, I thought she was amazing.
I remember that special.
Oh my God.
First special that she did.
Yes. Yep. I memorized all the characters and all the monologues, and I would try to perform them for my little teddy bears and stuff and my sister and my family. I was always like this performer, but I had absolutely no training. And my mother, God bless her, she has given me all the courage that I have, but no direction. She was a young mother. She had me and my sister when she was like 17. Like, she gave us what she could, but where I'm from and where she came from, this doesn't exist for us.
This is far out of reach.
Of reach. The best you can do is go to school and try to be like a teacher or a lawyer or something practical. And being that I was a writer, and that's where my skills fell in high school, I was told by my guidance counselor, you have a journalism scholarship. If you want to be on TV, be a news anchor. Do something practical. And
that's interesting advice and good advice, right?
I tried that. And as soon as I was studying journalism, I'm like, oh, I can't ever watch the news. This has a slant. You're teaching me to have a slant. I'm not going to do that. No, I like to live in my fantasy world bubble. Like, in my world, in my mind, the world is like, we should break out into song every 5 minutes. Like, I wish life was musical theater.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, no.
But a happy ending.
It would be
and
nice.
Slight drama in the middle.
Exactly.
So I have taken many steps forward and backwards at the same time, just not believing that I even belong in this industry, you know, coming from where I come from.
Well, clearly you've made a mark. So what happens? How do you get here? How do you get to New York? And I know you talk about it in Lasagna, but, you know, for the folks listening.
Well, to make this short, because we'll be here until next week with this story, child. Yeah. But essentially, I came here. I changed schools about 1,000 times. I got a production degree at the Art Institute of Pittsburgh, and I got a production degree because I was like, well, with my mediocre talent, you know, I can't rely on auditioning. I have to learn how to produce things for myself. So I got a production degree. I left that journalism scholarship, got my production degree, and I came to not even New York, New Jersey, and I enrolled in a school here, you know, with the excuse of, oh, eventually I'll audition, but I'm just going to continue school, because I was just scared. I was scared to cross the water. I used to daydream and just look over the water at the World
Trade
Center.
That's really fascinating to me, because it really is fascinating.
Terrified. Yeah. And the very first audition I ever went on, I booked it, but not as an actress, not as a comedian. It was a reality show called Temptation.
I mean, that's crazy. I saw that blip. I consider that a blip. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. But the thing that happened with that is I was the first one voted off the island by the other females for being, quote unquote, too intimidating. And I got absolutely nothing out of being on the show. It was the top show. It beat, I think the biggest show at the time was The West Wing. And we had like 17 million viewers that first episode. And long story short, I learned from that experience is stop trying to be famous and work on your skills. Yeah. And I came back to New York with that focus, you know, like, well, not fully.
Yeah, you got that early. I just got that last week.
Yeah. No, I, funny story. I love telling this story. Okay. It didn't happen just like that. It was in the back of my mind. But I was going to premieres and stuff, and they had like the New York cast and the LA cast, right? So the W opened on like down in 14th Street area.
Yeah.
And they invited the New York girls and guys to this opening. And I remember standing there on the red carpet, and it was like click, click, click.
Were you posing?
Oh,
you
I was posing. You could tell me. Gina, I thought I was hot stuff. I was the early Kim K. I was like, yes, I'm posing. And then all of a sudden I hear click, 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 click. Look this way. So I'm like, oh, yes. And then right on my little lemon light comes Jay-Z in his big limelight and like an entourage of guys. And I just watched him walk by me like, you just crushed my little lemon light. And he stood at the door. And this must have been when like Sky Pagers was out. I don't know how long ago it was, but he had some kind of phone or pager or whatever. And he was looking at it and he was standing by the door. And I'm like, why didn't he go in? And he looked up at me and he did the bro man nod at me like, what's up? Mm-hmm. I never rolled my eyes so hard at a man in my life.
You rolled your eyes at Jay-Z?
I rolled my eyes so hard. Now, in hindsight, honey, I'm like, wait a minute. Can we retract? I'll babysit for Blue. How can I get into this situation?
That's so funny. I didn't roll my eyes, but I did almost a very similar thing with Bruce Willis. I met Bruce Willis. I loved Bruce Willis. If you hear this, Bruce Willis, you can leave your wife now. It's okay.
Yes, Jay-Z, you can leave Beyonce. I'm available.
Yeah, I met him at the...
I am Becky with the good hair.
Yes, you are. Yeah, I met him in the China Club back in the day, and I remember being so high. I was so high. And I was like, hi, I'm Gina. And he said to me, literally said, aren't you the cutest thing I ever saw? And I said, my boyfriend wants to meet you. Like, what? Yeah, and then he was like, yeah, why don't you tell your boyfriend to come over and say hello?
Ooh.
Yeah, I went for, like, I was just so high. No. I was so ridiculously stupid. Anyway, yeah, so those are the early days. Foibles of, you know, who we think we are or something. I don't know. But so that happens, the reality show happens, and then nothing really comes of that.
Nothing really comes of it. I'm bouncing around in New York trying to figure out my way, trying to figure out acting, trying to figure out stand-up. I was...
Did you have an agent at this point? Because I would think, you know, with that little exposure...
You know what? I can't recall specifically because I've had so many manager agents, and so many different points of my career, even up until now, where I'm like, hello, what is this? You know, I don't know that I've ever or will ever figure out the agent manager situation. Or maybe I'm just a control freak where I just have to do everything myself. I don't know.
There's nothing wrong with that.
But at the time, I think that I did, but much like you would know in this business, a lot of times you'll have agents or managers and still just end up getting a lot of things on your own or through people that you know. Mm-hmm. So, I don't remember exactly if I did or if I didn't at the time.
I mean, that's a lot of accomplishment for somebody who, as you're telling me the story, has an insecurity about what they're doing. Like, you want to do things, but there's fear and insecurity behind them, but you're still motivated
to do it.
Absolutely.
And it's layered too. Like in the one woman show, Lasagna, I talk about that and I layer it into looks. I talk about how you could be addicted to plastic surgery and where the story goes from the journey from Temptation Island and onward. Because I was on Temptation Island. I had my daughter already. And I was on Temptation Island. Like, I'm the hot girl that they just kicked off. But meanwhile, I don't think I'm the hottest girl. I had stretch marks everywhere. You know, I had just had a baby. And I'm like on Temptation Island trying to cover up all my flaws. Like, wait, who, me? And I was standing next to Lola Corwin, which was like this huge Playboy model at the time.
Right.
And she had just did Madonna's music video, music. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, girl, they're going to kick you off of here looking like that. Beautiful Asian woman, voluptuous playgirl. I was like, okay, at least I'm going to stay for a while. They kicked my ass off there so fast.
But you said, it's funny because you said that they thought that you were intimidating. Yeah. I never watched the show because I don't know what year that was.
Temptation Island was like the Spice Girls. Nobody listened to the Spice Girls, but somehow they sold a million albums plus.
Right, right, exactly. But intimidating. Like, do you feel like, okay, because obviously when you look a certain way, pretty girl syndrome, right, mm-hmm. you talk about that. Uh-huh. You know, growing up, I don't know if you thought you were pretty growing up. I did not think I was. It's only like, I would say probably high school, I sort of blossomed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I never thought I was the pretty one. I thought I was the funny one. I thought I was the funny one. Did the intimidating come when you sort of evolved into your looks? Do people just see, you know, this beautiful, they see that first, and maybe because you're shy or there's fear or there's insecurity, which there is with me sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I'm very shy one-on-one. I'm not shy at all publicly. You know, maybe because I'm an entertainer, but one-on-one, I almost go into a shell. I'm learning how to be more social one-on-one and not be as shy. Yeah. But I think, you know, the pretty thing is a gift and a curse, as they say.
Right.
Like, when you're told you're pretty your whole life, it's like, that's where you place your value. And then there is no end to it. You'll never be pretty enough. You'll always find something wrong with yourself looking in the mirror because you're zooming in on a close-up. No one's zooming in on a close-up. No one see that. I don't see that pimple on your face. Like, get over it.
Right.
But in my mind, you see every little flaw. So I think the intimidating factor when I was younger was probably, you know, me being a little insecure and like overdoing my prettiness. As I've gotten older, I realized that there is a presence about me that is higher than just a physical sense. It's a spiritual sense, and I don't, you know, want to, you know, well, I don't know if people are spiritual or not, but I do feel like there's an anointing on me that makes me a little bright.
That's you said it, articulated exactly how I felt when I initially met you. I mean, I met you with Jason Steinberg.
Yes.
But then I saw you again. You'd come in to do a show at Broadway Comedy Club, and we had an exchange. But when you folks, if you, like I said, if you don't know Vaughn, you will, you'll experience that. It's undeniable. It's undeniable.
It's God. I have to credit that to God, and I have to accept that what it is. And a part of that acceptance is I've had to learn how to be the first one to talk to people. You know, when you're shy and insecure, and you always growing up think that people, oh, she thinks she's all that, you know, so you become defensive.
Yes.
I've learned to not be defensive, be the first one to speak to people, be the first one to make people feel okay talking to me. And I see how people are with me, and I make sure it's okay. And then you get the, oh my gosh, she's so nice for, you know, whatever they think I am.
Amazing, right?
I'm
yeah.
totally opposite of what people portray me to be. And, you know, a lot of that is effort on my part too, because I like to be the so-called pretty girl with the so-called ugly girl personality. Like, I'm cool. I don't even look at, I think pretty and sexy is silly. Like, I do a lot of sexy stuff, but it's just it's funny to me.
And some of that's just innate, right? Some of that's just in who your physical being is, I think.
Yeah, you know, and like, people think that you get stuff. Let me tell you something. I don't get nothing for being pretty, all right? I'm the chick that gets pulled over by the cops and get tickets, because as they approach the car and they look at you or look at me, they're like, oh, she thinks she's pretty. She's not getting out of this ticket. You think you're all that. Here's two tickets. Yeah. I've never gotten out of a ticket in my life.
Yeah.
I get two. Yeah. One for speeding, one for
and then maybe one for catching a little attitude, right?
Yeah. I'm always so nice. I look, I'm from a place where I respect the law. You know, even though I grew up in a drug infested place, I also grew up where in a time, and in Pittsburgh, you have a respect for the law, the military, and sports. That's where I'm from. And I do. I'm one of those. I don't hate the police. I hate bad cops, but I love good cops. I don't think every cop should, you know, be responsible for the bad stuff that's going on.
Sure.
Put it like this. I don't support criminals on either side of the badge. If you do something wrong,
you do, right.
Hey, I don't care what race, color, go to jail. Get out of here with your illegal ass, you know. But if you're not and something happens to you, that's very sad. And we have to, like, I wish I could fix the world. I really do.
Well, it's very balanced perspective. I mean, that's a healthy balance. Yeah,
and as a black woman, it's like, I say a lot of this stuff in my one woman show. And I remember talking about this particular thing in the midst of it. And my director saying, you know, the first time I did the show at the Pit, and she said, going into it, she said, do you really want to say that? Because I felt like the audience got kind of quiet and, you know, you want to rethink that. And I said, no, that's how I really feel. You know, I'm not going to go, I'm a black woman, so my perspective is just based on just this rigid. No.
Right.
There is, life in general is not black and white. There is, life is gray. It's not just one thing.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it's not black. It's
absolutely
not white.
It's like you're perpetuating exactly what you're fighting against when you generalize anything, police, race, women. You don't do that if you don't want it done to you.
You don't. But let me go back a little bit, because it's great. When you did Temptation Island, you said that you had a child at that point.
Yes.
Okay. So how old are you at this point? Or do you not want to do an age thing? It's okay. You don't have to.
You know what?
But you're a young mom.
I was a young mom. I do the age thing in my stand-up. So can I do a shameless plug and say, if you want to know how old I am, come see me do stand-up.
Yes, absolutely. Because you know where you're going to be.
Yes. Do you do plugs early?
Yeah,
Wednesday at Broadway Comedy Club.
Yeah.
You know, come out and see me and Gina.
Yeah, it's this Wednesday, because this show will air tomorrow, which is Tuesday, and the 14th, it'll air on WROM Radio. Hi, guys. And then Wednesday at Broadway Comedy Club in New York, you could see myself and Vaughn. So if you're, call the club, 212-757-2323. Come see us, 9 o'clock, 9 p.m.
Yes.
So we'll talk about age then. But so you're a young mom, and that had to give you, when we talk about perspective, that had to put everything
and
else.
And I have a daughter. So, you know, when she was born, I said, okay, this is the real deal. You know, I have to do something. And she's a girl, so I have to set a certain example. And then on top of that, I'm trying to do something in a business that, where I'm from, doesn't exist. So how am I going to look my child in her face and tell her she could do anything she puts her mind to, which is what my mother told me, and if I quit? So there is no end to this. Until the day that I die, I will be in this business doing my thing. And it doesn't matter how far I make it. I'm setting an example for my daughter that whatever you choose to do, there's no end until you don't breathe.
That's it.
Absolutely.
That's how I feel. I mean, this has been you know, we have our challenges, and I'll just touch on this briefly. You know, you were with Patrice O'Neill for a number of years. I'm just going to say that. And so to live in any type of shadow of any of that, which I don't think you do at all, by the way.
Oh, I absolutely do. I do.
Well,
I'm dealing
on
with
some
it.
Levels, mm-hmm. yes, but like to be your own woman through that, because looking, like I said, if I didn't know what I know, judging you on your merits in comedy and all of that, Like, I'm like, I'm fascinated with you and what you're doing, right?
Thank you.
So that's my thing. But given what you're doing with that, like, you have that, whether it's a burden or a blessing, right?
It's a little bit of both.
Right.
And you know what? As a woman and as a mother, we talked about this a little bit off air when you were like, you've done so much.
Right.
And in my point of view, I have not even really graced the surface of what my purpose here is for, because I spent 10 years with Patrice.
Right.
And my daughter, you know, she's now a teenager, but I've been a dedicated mother, dedicated wife. And I've done all of this without even focusing on myself first. I've been third in my life for so long, to the point where it's like, I just now figured out that I have a name. I used to make this joke all the time, you know, I'm Patrice's girl and Mimi's mom. Mm. Oh, what's my name? Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a name. Oh, what is it? You know, so now that, you know, I am responsible for his legacy, I am in charge of the Patrice O'Neal name, and I'm working on his documentary. I produced three of his albums, albums.
Right, but that's what I'm getting at. That's a lot of work for you on that level than to be raising a child.
And raising my daughter,
To read what I read about, UCB and, all the other shows that you've been involved with, the writing.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. And this is, like I said, without focusing on me, I'm just now starting to focus on myself and my comedy. And when I was doing BET Centrics, According to Him and Her, a couple of years ago, Keith Robinson, who is a really good friend of Patrice's and a family to me, he's helped me so much with transitioning into just focusing on myself, because he said, you know, you keep dipping in and out of stand up. When are you going to give it a full season? You know, you have to just stop and focus on you.
Vaughn, when are you going to give it a full season? Vaughn. Vaughn.
Just do comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
And ever since I made that decision to do that, I feel like I'm in a transitioning phase, mm-hmm. because my daughter's going to be graduating high school next year. And around this time next year, hopefully the documentary will be done and on its way out there. And I feel like, you know, I can finally, like, fully 100% just focus on me. And right now I'm you know, in my own lane, but it's still, I have a few things to complete. I'm a woman of completion, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And if I can do all that I've done so far, imagine in my head what's going to happen these next few years in my career, where I can go, you know what? There were a lot of things when Patrice passed away that I dedicated myself to, which was anything that I just wasn't with him for 10 years.
Right.
We worked together. You know, I was working with Patrice on a lot of things. And I said, you know, whatever was going on is going to get done. That's the woman that I am. And from his three comedy albums to the book Speak Fluent Man is basically Speak Fluent Man is a book about my relationship with Patrice and the things that I learned in a 10-year relationship with him, because he was pretty well known, if you know of him, for his philosophies on relationships, amongst a plethora of other things, politics, race. He had a very strong point of view. And he used to say to me, you know, you understand man truth in a different way. And you have a lot to offer women. You should write a book. And I was like, I don't want to write a book. This is the philosophies of Patrice on there, from a woman's point of view. No way. And he's like, you should. So to appease the situation, I drew up an outline. He's like, give me the top things that you learned from our relationship that you would want to offer if you wrote a book. So I gave him an outline. It was like double standards, entitlement, the natural order of things with men and women, you know, these whole philosophies that I learned with him that I came in the door believing anyway. I just didn't know how to articulate it through my emotions as a woman.
Yes.
And men are very logical. And he taught me how to be logical above my emotions, which is the crust of the book. And I gave him that outline, and he kissed me on my forehead. He looked at it. He was like, you're going to have a bestseller. And that, I was like, well, let me put this away. I did what I needed to do.
Right.
And, you know, so that was one of the things on a list when he passed away that I was like, I have to complete. And the documentary is my way of putting, because he died right before he exploded into superstardom.
Yes.
And so the film, to me, he loved film. And the film to me is a way, the documentary is my way of putting him in a starring role in a film that I believe that he absolutely deserves. And it's not just a film about Patrice's becoming, like the interviews that we've done so far, it's like about an era in comedy.
Absolutely.
It centers around Patrice, of course, it's about him, no doubt, but yes. Just the vibe of it. And we've had Colin Quinn and Big J. Okerson, yeah. and Jim Norton, you know, the guys.
Yeah, the guys. That was the crew of my era.
It's just starting to feel like, you know, that tough crowd comedy seller. Yeah. So it's going to be beautiful when, you know, people give me time. I'm not shooting this on my iPhone. Okay. This is a real feature length film.
Right.
And people, you know, reach out to me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook all the time. Like, Where is it? I'm like, dude, this is a real film. It's going to take some time, but it's going to be a beautiful film.
That's great. I'm very happy that's happening. I love Patrice, and I want to get back a little. Well, we'll talk about the book a little bit more. I want to ask you some questions about that, but my personal experience has always been good, and he was spot on with relationship advice. I would pull Patrice aside. What's the matter with you, Gina? I'm dating somebody. I tell him the name of some like random comedian I'm dating, and he'd like squint his eyes up and just be
turn
like,
his nose.
Oh my God, Gina, you know? And so,
he was very generous with the information.
He was
with everyone.
Really loving far more than
tough though. Let me tell you, people would be around Patrice and get a taste of him, and we're like, "Oh my God, okay, that's enough of the truth for today." Like, I'll
truth.
See you.
He's big on the truth.
I don't want to see you for like another month. My goodness, it's heavy. I lived with that truth for 10 years. You know what I mean? So he gave me such a wealth of knowledge and such a tough skin. Like when I first was doing stand up, I didn't even tell him I was doing stand up back in the day.
Yeah. That's right. You did it. When you first met, you met on a film, right?
The 25th Hour.
Right, okay.
Yeah, Spike Lee's 25th Hour. He was actually in the film. I was, I did what they call an ADR session, the sound, additional voiceover stuff after the film is done, where you go in and, you know, make, you know, the noises, like in the clubs and stuff, because they're really not filming that or whatever.
Right.
And I, young actress, just trying to get in there. My roommate knew the casting director, and I was just trying to get a SAG card, and she hooked me up. I was able to come to the ADR session, and that made me SAG that day. So another moment young career where I was like, oh, I've arrived. I'm going to be famous now. No, I still to this day have paid more dues with SAG than I've ever made.
That's amazing. Yes.
But I met him there, and he told me, you know, he was like talking to all the girls and my roommate and everything, and completely ignoring me. And he, you know, was telling everybody, you know, it was a Tuesday, so he's like, I have a show Friday at Caroline's, you guys should come. And I'm like, what, in my most ghetto young girl, you know, voice, because I had a heavy accent when I first moved here, so you could hear it a little bit now. I used to do One Life to Live and soap operas, so I started taking voice classes to clean up my speech when I was, you know, doing soap acting. And but that particular day, you know, I was on my lazy voice. And in my most ghetto, neck-shaking attitude, I looked up at Patrice and was like, well, why can't I come? You ain't inviting me. And he goes, I guess you were going to come with her anyway, talking to my roommate. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, my God, what did I do? And he's like, you know what? You have pretty girl syndrome. You know, and long story short, went to the show, started hanging around Patrice, and he's like, I'm going to do you a favor. You know, every guy that you meet is trying to sleep with you because you're pretty, and you haven't learned a thing from men. So I'm going to do you a favor. I ain't going to touch you. You can hang around. I'm going to be your friend and teach you about men.
Well, that's a good lesson. But, you know, people will say, you know,
people absolutely
will say that.
That was his way. Pimping his way in.
But it's a gentlemanly way in.
But
gentlemanly way in. He wanted to get to know you.
He did do that. We morphed into a relationship over the years. It was not anything fast. We didn't even have sex for a long time. You know, it was not. I was like his third wheel on dates.
I mean, were you like if whether it's Patricia or any man, when if were you like drawn to him? And
oh, absolutely. Okay. When he hit me with the truth, I was like, where have you been my whole life? Because I always had a desire to understand men better. And I came from a relationship where I was with my daughter's father, and my perspective from that relationship and my high school relationship, which you'll read about in a book.
Right.
I talk about in a book other my prior relationship to Patrice and why I was so ready to accept man truth the way I did and what my mindset was. I came from, you know, I'm a very domestic woman. You know, I like being in a relationship. I'm an alpha female, as they call it, that likes a more dominant man.
Same here.
Right. So I love being a queen to a king. I don't want to be in the king's position. I want to be the woman.
Yes.
But you can't just let any old body lead you. And
good
I was
point.
In a relationship where I'm like, okay, as a wife or girlfriend, I get to do all your chores and cook for you while you go out and have fun with your mistress or side chick. So I left those early relationships, and got into a relationship for about a year and some change where I was like, who has a girlfriend? Side chick here. I spent about a year and a half as someone's side chick, a wealthy, famous person that I don't name by name. But I was with him, and it was the only relationship I never felt lied to in. And
because you knew your role in that.
Right.
You really knew your
exactly.
role in that. Yeah,
and I have nothing to this day bad to say about
him. Right, because it was what it was.
Fun. I was like, oh, this is what it's like on the other side. You know, I've been the wife type. Now I see what's on the other side, and it's really fun. But I knew that I was going to let that fade away. We faded away, and we kind of faded away during the time that I first met Patrice. And I was like, if I don't meet a guy where I can be respected as a wife and have fun with him like he would a side chick, I'll be single forever. And in walks Patrice O'Neill. And that's exactly what our relationship was. I was respected as his wife, but we had fun with each other like you would have fun
and
with a side chick.
That's the best event. That's the best kind of relationship,
right?
Where it's and so, all right, so let's talk about it, because I will read the book, but there were things that I wrote down some little notes. What did I write here? Okay. Well, one of the things you talk about is emotion versus the logic and
logic
the emotion.
Logic versus emotion. That's a biggie.
So that's the biggest one, I think, because
absolutely.
I think I'm emotional, right? I'm a woman. My first reaction, my first one, and that's in anything, is an emotional one.
Absolutely.
It's coming from some childhood bullshit.
It's coming from
wherever it is. It's an emotional, like, especially when you talk about, like, letting go of your ego. If it's my ego, it's if I feel like you're, I'm being rejected in some way, it's an immediate emotional. Now, my logical brain doesn't come into play.
Yep.
Until kind of after the fact. And it's there.
Yep.
There's some foot in logic.
It's just you have to fight through your emotions to get to it.
Right. So the key is reaching the logic more
quickly.
Quickly. In an advanced stage of logic. I
absolutely.
Need to get that quickly.
So the title within itself kind of explains a little bit about that. It's Speak Fluent Man. It's a language. Like, we're women. We'll never be able to think like them because they're men. And we think like women, which is through our emotions. Men live in a logical place. It's not that they don't have emotions. It's just that they don't live in the fantasy in their head. They live in logic. We live in the fantasies in our head. We will write, direct, star in a movie and put them in it, and it always has a dramatic ending. We're always in a romantic comedy in our emotions.
Yes.
And then we get to a logical place later. Sometimes we don't get to a logical place. We'll start an argument that lasts 6 months to 6 years based on something that happened in our head. And men, the thing with women that I really want us to understand is we don't win because we scream and shout and they get quiet. What we do is we push them further away. You could have a very faithful man on your hands, but the more you act like an entitled, crazy, emotional chick, you are sending him on his way to go get something elsewhere.
And here's the interesting thing. I'll just give you an insight into who I am. Okay. I'm emotional. I never think at the start of it that I am. I'm like, I'm gonna be cool with this. I'm not gonna be texting anybody. And then I find out if it's for whatever reason, if it's not working out. I can usually sense things not mm-hmm. working out. And then I either want to fight for it, or if I don't care, then yep. it doesn't matter. But if I fight for it and it's you know, going down the drain, then that's when it gets ugly. Like, yep. then that thing gets ugly if I'm starting to fight for it. So the thing that I've learned, and again, this is relatively recent, which is why the book is, for me, very valuable, because it's a kind of a recent acknowledgement in that I have my own power. I really just do.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you just let go
mm-hmm.
and you trust that, you know, you're meant to be with who you're meant to be. I mean, that's kind of part for me.
Yeah, but once you meet that person, you can't screw it up either.
Right, exactly.
You know what? I would love for you to read the book, because I did bring you a copy, and come back and like have like a full discussion about these things once you actually have a chance to read it. I would love that, because I feel like you'll get it in a way that it's an easy read, by the way. It's very easy read. Most people who have read it said that they read it in like a day or two.
Well, you know, it's funny, because what woman doesn't love reading about how to talk about, you know, how to deal with men? You know, it's like, yeah.
But you know what? The whole fighting through our emotions things, it leads into a double standard that you have to just think about as a woman. You're not right because you have a vagina. Okay, let's just start right there.
Yes.
Just because you feel something does not make it right. A lot of times, and I've caught some heat about this from some, especially feminist women, in saying this, but a lot of times women are like children. We throw tantrums through our emotions. Example, we could sit with our girlfriends, watch TV, and gawk over our favorite celebrity athlete, say we're going to do all kind of sexual stuff, hee hee ha ha girl talk, and our man could be right in the next room or right in the room. It's like, oh honey, whatever, you know, we're just kidding. Flip that situation around.
Oh hell no.
Flip it. You can't even handle it. And look, Gina can't handle it in her imagination right now.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and it's
that's
the fight that we get jealous and about them watching porn.
And you know what?
It's, you can't, you have to go every single thing, Gina.
Yes.
Every single thing. Before you open your mouth with your emotions, flip it around and go, how would I feel if he flipped out on me in front of my girlfriends for having this feeling?
You're absolutely right. I'm going to give you a perfect scenario. So I'm out with this man fairly recently. I hope he is not listening to this.
He's absolutely listening.
Because we're still hanging out.
Oh, he's listening.
And we were out, and we were in this place, and I think he went outside for a minute. He came back, and I heard this woman's voice behind me. And so I turn around, and he's just talking to this woman, and she is, she's drop dead gorgeous woman behind me.
Uh-huh.
And I was dumbfounded. Like, I didn't even know how to be like a human being, because I was so shocked. We were hanging out. He just stepped away for a second, and then he walked back and he was talking. It was perfectly innocent conversation. And I felt my body start to shake because I was attracted to her. Like,
right.
I was like, you could not deny that the woman. So I'm like, how do I, because old behavior, old uh-huh. thought process
yeah.
starts rolling into my head. Like, how do you just be a person in this moment? Like, how do you just act normal when
it's
you're
hard.
Having a physical reaction? I'm having a biological, you know, like animalistic response, like get away, you know, and I'm not going to do that.
It's natural.
Nuts.
And it stems from insecurity, whether,
yes.
you know, especially being an older woman and, or you know, it's like, it's so complex, but it's so simple at the same time. All you have to do is be easy, be cool. He's going to do what he's going to
do
anyway.
Do what he's gonna do. Yeah.
But a lot of times men just like the idea of doing something. They don't want to do it.
Yeah, he could have a lot of ideas. You could have ideas.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like, it's
have
like,
ideas.
Never underestimate how a man feels about his freedom. He doesn't want to, he will marry you. He wants to feel like he's still free. And sometimes just being able to look, like Patrice, a beautiful woman or whatever, he kind of treated me like one of the guys. And he was, would you? I'm like, yeah, she's kind of hot. Like,
yes,
we will have
yes.
those conversations. We don't let the elephant be in the room, so to speak.
Yes.
We talk about it. And if I feel jealous, we talk about that too. And he goes, well, what are you really feeling? Like, why? I'm standing here with you. That was 2 hours ago. We're home now.
Yes.
Calm down.
Well, you said that. I think that's the key ingredient is that, you know, is people... Even myself, why would I want to have restrictions on anyone's freedom?
Right.
You know,
you don't want that.
I don't want that. And I do have sort of archaic beliefs. And I'm not saying in any prior relationships I brought them in, but elements of them I did bring in to them. And I'm sure I lost situations in the past because of it. But I think I do firmly believe anything you meant to have, you will have. So but I do think people need to know their freedoms.
And I know you want to move on to another question, but some of it too, Gina, is like, where I think women are a little bit like kids, is any attention is good attention. So what we're doing with men sometimes when we go, oh, you're talking to this beautiful girl, we're looking for them to go, whatever, she's beautiful, but I'm with you. You know, we're looking for a certain amount of attention. And if we don't get it, we'll have a little tantrum about that too. So when I say, because I said a few minutes ago, just talk about it, I don't mean argue about it. I mean, be cool and just talk about it. He's a human being. Just because you in a relationship with someone you're not all of a sudden, that people take that we're as one a little bit too literally.
Yes.
You are still two separate people.
Absolutely.
And you still have the same thought you did prior. A relationship is just a commitment that, you know, we're doing something that's above all the other BS. And that doesn't mean he's never going to want to look at another booty on earth. He's going to look at every pair booty of boobs that bounce down the street. And you know what? I'm looking at, you said cutie too.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I want to like go down on every guy that I think is cute.
Yeah.
I'm still in a relationship that I'm in.
All right, Coach Vaughn.
Yes.
All right, Coach Vaughn. When did that start?
Okay, so I have been in love with Twitter since it started. And my outlet on Twitter, my outlet for basketball, I'm a huge NBA fan, was Twitter. And I would be on Twitter calling the games. You know, I'm a huge Knicks fan. So at the time, Nate Robinson was like the main guy. Mm-hmm. You know, the Knicks are so sad. But and then Coach D'Antoni. So I would be like David Lee and Danilo Gallinari. I'm like on Twitter, like calling the games. And my fan follower people would start calling me Coach Vaughn, because they were like, you know more what to do than the coaches. So it started there. And then after I wrote the book and started making appearances like on the Bill Cunningham show and getting into relationship advice and stuff like that, it kind of morphed into Coach Vaughn, the relationship person. I'm not like licensed or anything like that. Everything that I talk about is based on my book and my experiences with Patrice. I don't have like a, hey, this is the blueprint to fix your life. No, I'm telling my story of what worked. Take from it what you will. And leave what you want. You know, understand who you are is the point of the book, and your yeses and your noes, and how to just be human to your guy. And how your guy, this book, men should read it too. Men get a lot out of this book too, especially the last chapter, For Men's Eyes Only.
Yes.
Because I talk about, you know, okay, now you have this woman who's done all these things, don't take advantage of the situation. And I talk about what Patrice and I went through, you know, with him being in the hospital, having a stroke and passing. And this was 1 month prior to our wedding date. So I had absolutely no power to do the things that he wanted me to do. You know, I don't want to get too dark with it, but there is a lesson in, you know, once you know, Patrice and I were not responsible for a long time in our relationship and didn't look at marriage as something that we needed to do until we kind of grew up together. You know, we were young, we grew into a mature relationship, into realizing the importance of marriage, because neither one of us come from a place where marriage was looked at. It was like, oh, we don't need the government in our business to prove our love. You know, you heard that bullshit before.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you do, because you can't protect each other otherwise. So,
yes.
I went off on a tangent and I don't know where that came from. So reel me back in.
Okay. No, that's okay.
Oh, the Coach Vaughn thing.
Coach Vaughn.
I was just saying that, you know, it went from sports and me, like I do radio and sports all the time. I love talking about NBA, love the sport of basketball. And then it morphed into, you know, coach stuff.
I love it. And as an aside, I'm a big sports fan. I love all sorts of sports. So if you go or do anything, let me know, because I'm a baseball person. I love baseball. I know we have a few minutes. I want to talk.
Goodness.
Yes. Okay, this may all tie in together because you are a faith-based person.
Absolutely.
How much does that play into everything you do, which I
clearly, 100%. 100%. God's glory for everything. You know, I'm a very spiritual person. I say this all the time to people. I don't listen to what people say. I don't listen or to what people do. I feel your vibe. I can feel strong vibes and dark vibes, because a dark vibe could have you do and say great things but have bad intentions. So I go off of, I'm very spiritual. I try to let God lead me through everything. And I think that's why I'm able to do so much, is because I lean on God.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, this is going to sound, I mean, to other people, but I mean, there's a lot of power in that. There's just a lot of power in leaning on God.
Yeah, I'm very blinded and, you know, very, try to be very narrow. And, you know, I definitely fall off. I have my dark moments, especially these past 5 years being single after being in a very strong, committed, protected relationship for 10 years. Now I'm back out to the wolves. You know, I've had very dark moments. I gained a lot of weight. I eat donuts all day, slip and fell on a couple young dudes. You know, it's a lot of dark moments that had nothing to do with God.
I don't know. I mean, you know, depends on how you look at it. It's perspective.
You know, I've read through the entire Bible page by page. You
and
know?
Not everyone can say that. But speaking of that, you said something, and I love this. Your truth is your religion.
Absolutely.
And I love that. Like,
because
that's
I don't discriminate
thing.
Against other religions.
Right.
I can't be mad at someone who was raised a different religion than me.
Right.
And that's what they believe. My thing is, any way to get to God as a spiritual being, I'm fine with that. You know, my way is my way. Your way is your way. I don't know what's in your heart as a human being. Mm-hmm. You could be from a whole other country. I don't know what that is. I'm not going to judge you. However you get to God, God bless you. Just don't beat me in the head because I say I love Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So that being said, we have to go. We have to wrap up.
My goodness.
I know it went really fast, and I'm very happy that we had this time. Where are you going to be? Other than Broadway Comedy Club, you're going to be there on Wednesday, the 15th, at Broadway Comedy Club in New York City at 9 p.m., 212-757-2323. If you want to make a reservation, you happen to be in Manhattan. Where can people find you? Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff?
Yeah, so Twitter and Instagram is the same, at Von DiCarlo, VONDECARLO. And Facebook, same. But you know what? Just go to my website, VonDiCarlo.com or SpeakFluentMan.com. That takes you to my website, but just right to the book. And I have all the little icons to all my social media right on my website, just to make it easy. And in any future shows, you know, you can get all of that there.
Great. It's been a pleasure having you.
I had so much fun.
Oh, that's perfect.
Is that our Lily
Munster? The Munsters.
Yes.
It is.
All Hi, right. Mom. Thanks
all
for
right.
a cool name.
Don't tell Lily. all right. We've had a great time with Von DiCarlo. We'll have you back.
Yes. Read the book and have me back as soon as you get through it.
Absolutely. You've been listening to WROM Radio in Detroit and the iTunes, hopefully, as well. This is Gina Savage for the Red Light Podcast Redux. Thanks to Jim Verne on sound.